Luke Skywalker. I thought he was a myth.
It's a dinosaur.
Get busy living, or get busy dying. That's goddamn right.
All that matters is that two stood against many. That's what's important.
Hey everybody, welcome to Cinephene Incorporated. I'm your host as usual, Joseph Daly, and I'm here today with Michaela Tyson. Michaela, say hello.
Hello.
This week we're just going to do a what I've been watching. And Michaela, you want to tell everybody what you've seen since our last episode, our top 10 of the 2016 episode?
Right, yeah, so I actually rewatched a couple of those from the top 10. I watched The Nice Guys again, I watched Hell or High Water again. And then I watched a documentary that I had never heard of before, and I couldn't believe, like, I hadn't come across. It was called There's Something Wrong with Aunt Diane. It was an HBO documentary that came out in 2011 about the Taconic State Parkway crash. So it was a car crash that ended up killing 8 people. But it's not what you think. Like, it's a car crash on the surface, but once you dig into this story, there's a lot of weird things that went into making this car crash happen. Diane Schuler was driving the wrong way down the Taconic State Highway, and hit another car head on and ended up killing 8 people total. And it's a really fascinating documentary. It's really depressing. If you like true crime and true crime documentaries, it's definitely a good one and a well-made one. But it's definitely a bummer, and there's no real answer to the mystery at the heart of this crash. So don't go into it expecting to be swayed one way or another on how this scene should be viewed. Like we've talked about before with, like, Making a Murderer and Serial, they definitely have a perspective they want you to see, and they play to that. This one is more just trying to find an answer for the people that suffered at the hands of this crash. And there really isn't an answer. But I definitely recommend it if you like HBO documentaries and true crime documentaries. And I watched that in preparation because next week HBO is releasing the long-awaited Slender Man documentary. About the Slender Man stabbings in Waukesha, Wisconsin. So I can't wait to watch that, and I'm sure on our next show we'll talk all about it. And then I watched like 15 minutes of the Bye Bye Man before I left the theater. So I can't really say much about that movie, but for what little I saw, the acting was absolutely terrible. So that's what I watched this week.
Yeah, the Bye Bye Man looked... You know, I called it like 8 months ago when I first saw the very first teaser that was released online,
mm-hmm.
that it was, I was like, well, this is a really cheap knockoff of It Follows.
Oh, exactly.
With Carrie Ann Moss in it. Like,
yeah, it's directed by a woman, so that made me want to, like, financially support it. I think she even directed Snoop Dogg's Heart of Horror, which is, like, a really terrible horror movie that I love. but I can't recommend it to anybody. I really don't think... It's going to make a shit ton of money, which is unfortunate, because that's just going to perpetuate more bad horror movies. But, yeah, that's all I've seen this week.
Dang, I saw a movie that was absolutely terrible. It's called Underworld Blood Wars. Have you seen any of the Underworld movies?
Yeah, I've seen the first two, and then I just kind of stopped caring.
Yeah, well, the first one's the only really great one, and then the second one's like, well, this is maybe not a great movie series after all.
Right.
And then, like, the third one is kind of, like I've said it before, the third one I actually kind of enjoy because it's the period setting, and it's completely brilliantly cast, top down, but it's not a great movie. And then I didn't even bother to see the fourth one, and I saw this one because I heard it was directed by a woman as well, named Anna Forrester, and I have a hope that she'll become a great director going forward, but man, this is already the worst movie of the year. This is, abysmal. Like, it is like there is no sense of storytelling at all. Like, they don't, like, this has this movie has a son character who, it's hard for me to rationalize that these movies are about, like, where vampires having lineages at all that aren't through, like, biting. Like, right. They have, like, offspring, which is totally, like, stupid. Like, the idea that a vampire could maintain an erection of any kind.
Right.
Considering that they're dead. Like, I'm just like, that's not, let alone a female vampire being able to foster or develop a fetus and carry it to term. I'm like, I don't buy any of that.
Yeah.
Maybe that's my stumbling block. I don't.
No, isn't the mythology, like, the whole point of those movies? So, like, when you start messing with the mythology, like, why are you even going, you know?
Yeah, and in the mythology of these movies from the ground up is stupid, because the whole vampire-lichen war started because a lichen impregnated a vampire, and you're like, well, that doesn't work because, you know, biology.
Right.
But whatever, and it's just very frustrating for me on, like, a... just buying into it, but they are cool in, like, just a, like, this one in particular, you can tell they're like, well, let's do Game of Thrones, but with vampires and werewolves now. Like, they had a different idea for the series, and it became more about, like, the vampire, like, a very Starks, Lannister-y kind of conflict, and the werewolves kind of just became bad guys, which is a really weird message to send in a movie. I've heard a lot of people say that that's cool. But I'm like, well, the werewolves are always portrayed as blue-collar workers in the movies, right? They work in trains or train stations, subways. You know, they work in steel mills and stuff. Like, they're always portrayed as the blue-collar worker. And then you're telling me that, like, all of a sudden I'm supposed to be against the blue-collar 99% and I'm supposed to be behind the elitist vampire 1%? I just can't really get into that.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a weird series. I love vampires. I love werewolves. But I don't feel this the same way I do about Resident Evil, which is, well, at least they're fun. Like, those movies are at least kind of fun. They're all bad, but at least there's fun to be had in them.
Right.
So I really was bummed out by that, because these movies have Kate Beckinsale in them. And she's, you know, she's an incredibly beautiful human, but she's, like, a really powerhouse actress when she's allowed to be. And I don't know why she's even in these movies. Like, I just don't get it. Like, she used to be married to the director of the franchise in general, but, like, they're not together anymore. So it kind of makes me wonder why she's still, like, doing them. Maybe it's just an easy paycheck for her. Because she's getting older and people don't want to cast older women, despite the fact she still looks like, you know, she still looks.
Same.
Yeah, she looks exactly the same. I don't know. It's weird. I'm kind of bummed that it even happened. It's such a bad movie. And apparently they're working on a six, but I think it bombed so hard that they might not actually do a sixth one, which would be cool.
So is it financially failing too?
I don't know about worldwide, but I think in America it bombed. I'm pretty sure. There was, like, one person in the theater with me, so and I saw it, like, opening weekend. So I'm hoping that's a good sign that people are done with these movies. I also, my significant other and I were together this weekend, and she and I went out and saw Martin Scorsese's Silence, which was heavy. Like, I can't really describe it. It's complicated. It's not the movie you thought it was going to be, but it is the movie that... it's hard to describe it. It's a very complicated, very brutal and harsh movie. It goes there. It's as brutal as The Passion of the Christ, but it's so much more tasteful, if that makes any sense.
Right.
And you can tell that while making the movie, Martin Scorsese was grappling with his own faith, and that's probably why he really wanted to tell the story. Like, it feels more personal than any movie he's made in, like, a decade. And it really fills me with joy that he's back to that Martin Scorsese. He's making the personal movies. He's making the Raging Bulls, the Taxi Drivers. He's not making Shutter Island. You know, I'm really glad he's out of his Shutter Island Hugo phase. Even though Hugo was amazing, I didn't really think Shutter Island was really great personally.
No, I didn't care
but
for
it's
it.
Yeah, it's just kind of a by the numbers movie, and for Scorsese, I kind of expect better.
I could see that plot twist a mile away in that movie.
I mean, yeah, you see it the moment like they start heading to the island. You're like, okay, I know what this is. I know what this is going to be. Yeah, I don't know. It's I think everyone needs to see it. It bombed financially. Everyone's kind of resigned to the no one's going to see this because it is really brutal, and it also paints the Jesuits. You're in the point of view of the Jesuits, but you're also kind of like you totally get why the Japanese are reacting to the Christian faith the way they are. The movie's pretty clear that like the Japanese people who've converted to Christianity in the movie that we see, they don't actually believe in Jesus Christ or God. They just like the fact they just believe in the fact that these Jesuit priests are coming there and saying, "Your lives suck here. Here is the way out. Jesus will give you paradise and freedom and like." All you'll never go hungry. You'll never go cold. You'll always have food, which is a really fascinating argument because I think it really pulls the rug out from underneath the Jesuits. But the movie's still on their side, which is really weird. It's complicated. It's going to take a long. People are going to be talking about this movie 10 years from now as like the forgotten Martin Scorsese movie. In the same way that they come back, everyone comes back to The Last Temptation of Christ as man. People really slept on this when this came out because that also bombed.
Right.
I don't know what it is about Martin Scorsese making faith-based movies that bomb. He's made 3 faith-based movies, and they've now all bombed.
This movie's actually on track to be his lowest-grossing movie ever.
I know, it's really unsettling, because you'd think, and part of it is Paramount completely doesn't know what to do with it.
I saw no promotion for this movie. Like, I saw one trailer.
Yeah, like, no promotion, I saw one trailer. I've seen it in front of a couple movies, but, like, no promotion online, no push at all. The only people talking about it are people who have to write about movies.
Mm-hmm.
And Scorsese himself. And it's really, it bums me out because, you know, Christian audiences flock to see God Is Not Dead. God Is Not Dead 2.
Kirk Cameron movies.
Kirk Cameron movies. And those movies aren't made with even an ounce of creative or artistic integrity that this movie was. Like, this is maybe the best faith-based movie made since Scorsese made The Last Temptation of Christ. And no one's going to end up going to see it. And that's really sad because it's incredible. Issei Ogata is in it. He's like a major Japanese movie star. He does, like, comedy for the most part. And he plays the kind of villain, kind of not villain of the piece. And it is one of the most sinister and funny performances I've ever seen. It's very Christoph Waltz in Inglourious Bastards.
All right.
Kind of. It's not nearly as much screen time, but that's kind of the character he plays. He plays an inquisitor. It's incredible. I think this is going to be a movie that I'm gonna keep coming back to throughout the next couple months and just unpacking it. It's really, really something. And I recommend anyone go out and see it. It's incredible. And then last night I went and saw a Monster Calls, which I really didn't want to go see at all because I kept hearing, oh, it's like super manipulative. And then other people saying it's one of the best movies of the year. And I was kind of like, you know, maybe I don't want to see the Liam Neeson as Groot movie.
Right.
Especially once, you know, you think, oh, it's a movie about a kid learning to deal with the fact his mom is dying. And you're like, I don't know if I want to sit through that. That's going to make me cry. It's going to be sad. But I went and saw it because I didn't really have much to do. And, wow, I ugly cry. That's like an ugly cry movie, like mucus streaming down your face. Like, it is punishingly sad. I don't know if I can recommend anyone to go see it, but it is, if you need a cry, that is the movie to go do it.
Is it more sad than Bridge to Terabithia?
I don't even remember Bridge to Terabithia all that well, but I do remember that was the movie they marketed as like this crazy fantasy Disney movie.
And it's a super sad movie.
It's like a super sad movie. I think it's way heavier than that.
Okay.
Like this is like really heavy, like hard to breathe at times heavy. Sigourney Weaver is great in it. Felicity Jones is incredible. And then the little boy they have in this movie is really great too. One of the best kid performances that I've seen in a long, long, long time. Yeah, that's all I've been watching. So you want to go ahead and let's talk about this week, Ridley Scott, Tom Hardy, and Steven Knight debuted their FX limited series Taboo. This was created by Tom Hardy and his father, Chips Hardy. I didn't realize Tom Hardy's dad was a novelist, but apparently he is. And I think we talked about this a little off air. This is a passion project of Tom Hardy's for at least a decade now, right? This is like a thing he's been kind of wanting to build towards for a long time. This is like an idea he's had in his head.
Yeah, this is something he's been working towards for a long time, and I'm glad for him that it finally came to fruition. I hope that doesn't give us too much expectation, though.
Yeah, I can definitely understand how you feel about that. You know, it's funny because I just got done talking about Silence. A lot of people don't know, and that's part of the problem with the marketing for Silence, was that Silence was a passion project of Martin Scorsese's for 30 years. He got obsessed with that book by Shusaku Endo. At the same time, he was working on adapting Nikos Katasakos, The Last Temptation of Christ. And that's like that project was sat with him for like 30 years. He's been trying to, like, literally ever since him and Leonardo DiCaprio have started working together in like the early 2000s. Like, he has tried to make that his next movie every single time, and something fell through because, how dare you make a movie with Japanese actors?
Right. Yeah, no kidding.
And I think that's a good instance of a passion project turning out great. You know, say what you will about the movie. It's a very complicated, very fascinating movie. This show, however, I'm going to come out right at the top. I'm going to say I'm intrigued. I'm really interested in seeing where it goes because I really like Tom Hardy in this. He's fabulous in it. He's badass. He's kind of mysterious, and he's hard. But I think we might have some agreement. The show doesn't explain itself at all. I mean, did you get – like, I don't even know what the show's about other than this guy is into incest and he's
and
like half Native and diamonds and half Native American.
So, I pulled up a synopsis just so that like I could kind of understand what I watched. But I want to preface this by saying I agree with what you're saying. Like, I'm intrigued, but I'm not hooked. Like, I'm not like a trailer should a pilot should really grab you. That's its point, right? Is to like grab you. This pilot, like, it feels like we're jumping into the middle of a season. You know, it doesn't feel like a pilot. But I love Tom Hardy. He is my, like, favorite actor of this generation. Like, I think he is the Marlon Brando of our generation. So I have a huge, like, just, I'm in love with this man, so I have a huge bias for him. But, like, at the same time, I have to kind of, like, t- take that out of it and just look at it objectively as, like, is this an interesting, well-done show? And I think the pilot was not nearly as interesting as it could have been. But, I mean, I'm interested to see where it goes, but it's also only 8 episodes, so there's not a lot of room if it's going to keep this pace that it's going. Because I see a lot of people are saying they think that the pacing was really good. I thought the pacing was far too slow.
I think I'm kind of in the middle. I thought the pacing itself was all right. I think the problem that I have is it doesn't explain anything.
No, it doesn't.
Like we can infer the history, right? This show takes place during, at the end of the War of 1812.
Right.
We know that. We know that they basically outline, here's where the treaties are going to be signed for determining the United States, British border in America. So we can infer that that means then this is the War of 1812. It's the end. They're going to sign the Treaty of Ghent, all that stuff. The bigger problem, though, is we're just dumped into this story, and they just pick up with the plot threads as if, like, there were 6 hours before this.
Exactly. Yeah, like I said, it feels like the middle of the season.
Yeah, and I think that's an interesting decision, but I think – I really don't like Tom Hardy has like these weird moments where he's speaking obviously languages he picked up from Africa, his time in Africa. But there's also like this weird magical realism thing where he can like sense. It's really kind of like it doesn't explain itself really well.
Right.
And that's my big problem with it is I don't really understand what's going on. And you and I are both like, you know, we're not like dumb movie viewers who want to watch American Idol and that's it. Like,
right.
We pick this stuff up. We watch really heavy, complicated stuff all the time. And I
feel like if you're doing a period piece, you have to explain more than you would on a regular show. You have to explain.
Yeah, more. Yeah, exactly. I do want to echo your sentiments about Tom Hardy, though. Mm-hmm. Like, he is a, you know, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do a little non sequitur. I was listening to Howard Stern the other day. This is like an older episode, but they had Bradley Cooper on, and Howard Stern asked Bradley Cooper, "Hey, would you ever I hear you're looking at doing TV. Like, why do you want to do TV?" And he goes, "Well, if the script's good and the talent involved is great, of course I'd want to do TV. I don't know why that's even a question." And Howard Stern was kind of like, "Well, it's still TV. You're like this big Oscar-winning movie star. Why the hell do you want to do TV? Isn't that like a step down for you?" And Bradley Cooper had this really interesting, fascinating answer, which was, "Yo, man, Tom Hardy does TV. Why can't I do TV?" It just goes to show you, like, Tom Hardy's one of, if not maybe the most respected actor of his generation, that Bradley Cooper, who's been nominated like 3 times in a row for Best Actor, is like, dude, Tom Hardy's doing TV. I get to do TV now.
That's awesome that Tom Hardy is his standard for quality. Like,
yeah, that's I mean, Tom Hardy's incredible. I mean, you can go back to like Star Trek Nemesis, and the dude is killing it as Shinzon in that piece of shit movie.
For me, it's Rock and Rolla.
Yeah, he was in that, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was Handsome Bob, and he's fantastic in that. Yeah, for me, it goes way back. Yeah.
That is really far back, yeah. Yeah, Tom Hardy's incredible. What did you think of the hat? He has to wear this fucking big Abraham Lincoln hat, and it's really ridiculous on him.
It's really ridiculous, but, like, weirdly enough, he pulls it off, you know? Like,
I feel like he's too... Like, we see people like Abe Lincoln wear that hat, and history's vision of Abe Lincoln is he's super gaunt.
Yeah.
And it works with his, like, frame.
Right.
But Tom Hardy's a big strapping dude, and having this weird chimney hat is like, it just looks weird
comical.
For me.
It's definitely comical. It's
very comical. I don't know, like, I can't take him seriously in it.
Like, you're expecting him to take it off and reveal something. Like,
yeah, like he's got, what has he got, like a scar on his head or something? Yeah. He does
or
have
like
a lot of scars on
his face,
though.
He's hiding something in there. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And like, I guess my issue with this show is, like, okay, so it's called Taboo, right? Like,
yeah.
So show us some of the Taboo stuff. I know it's just the pilot, but, like I said, if you're going to hook us, show us some more of the, like, taboo stuff from when he was in Africa and not so much of the whispering in dark England, you know?
I don't think that that's the taboo.
You don't think Michaela?
No, the incest is the taboo, Michaela.
Okay. Well, but I mean, like, there's all those parts where people are like, is it true you did this in Africa? Is it true you did this?
Yeah.
Like, that's a lot of the show is people asking him that. So that's why I'm like, okay, are we just going to hear people whisper about it? Or are we going to, like, actually see any of this? Especially because, like, in a couple of the trailers, they showed, like, him, like naked in the woods in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah, and he's covered in tattoos, which I love. I love seeing Tom, because Tom Hardy actually has tattoos in real life. That's so awesome. Yeah, I don't know. This is a fascinating show. I've seen two episodes now. We were talking off mic. It's really confusing for me because I heard that the pilot was 81 minutes long or whatever, and I saw two hour long episodes, and you saw an hour long episode. Like, I'm confused on what I saw, but yeah, I mean, I'll say this, two episodes in, I still don't really know what's going on, but I get where it's going. Like, I can pick up the pieces and do the work and infer what I think is going on.
But you shouldn't have to.
Yeah, I just wish it would explain some stuff.
Right.
If that makes any sense.
We talked about before the show started that it probably wasn't a good sign that it got moved from Sunday to Tuesday nights.
I talked to someone who works in, like, TV writing,
mm-hmm.
and they think that's a better sign.
Because they don't want it to compete?
Because it's on FX.
Gotcha, okay.
And if being on FX, which is kind of a premier network, but is also still fighting for, like, regular TV viewers... Tuesday to Thursday night is, like, the prime time for them, that slot. So apparently, like, that was a strategic move to kind of attract as many people as possible. But I agree with you. I think Sunday night would have been better.
Yeah.
Or would have shown a little more confidence in it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a weird show.
Yeah. Like, I guess I can see them, especially if those weeknights are their bigger nights, and you might as well move it so that it's not competing with, you know, The Walking Dead and whatever
FX have on Sunday nights?
I have no idea.
Because they have a ton, they have The Americans, they have like a ton of standard shows too, don't they?
Yeah.
Because maybe they have something that's going on Sunday nights.
That's possible.
So did you like what you saw though?
I liked moments. I feel like I was kind of just thrown into something and never really told where I was or what I was watching, but I liked the potential that the show has. And like I liked the moments like that. You remember that one scene where it showed him on the slave ship when it was like filling with water?
Yeah.
Like that was cool. Show me more stuff like that.
That was kind of haunting. Like, some of that stuff was haunting. Some of that stuff was really cool and visually interesting.
Right.
I'm going to tell you what I think is going to happen in the show. I think the show is getting us to America, to the Nootka Sound or whatever?
Yeah.
It was just the place, like, his father, it was, like, the last thing his father owned or something.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Am I right?
Yep.
Okay. And I think what we're going to get is white people, Tom Hardy defending natives. That's what I think it's going to be. Using his, I think he's going to become like a kind of a pirate type character, and he's going to use this ship that he bought or whatever. It's convoluted. But I'm assuming we're getting to America and he's going to fight for natives. Like,
that sounds cool.
do you get, cause I don't know if you've seen like the promotional material for this show,
but
it's him like naked in like what looks like North America with like a spear and like a loincloth.
Yeah.
So I'm just kind of assuming, oh, I guess we're going to go to Dances with Wolves kind of territory.
Probably.
I don't know. I think I'm on the same boat as you. I don't think I loved this show, but I'm interested.
I'll be honest. If Tom Hardy wasn't in it, I wouldn't keep watching.
Yeah.
No, I would have watched the pilot and been like, all right, this wasn't what I was hoping, and then probably not picked it up again.
What if like 8 weeks or 6 weeks from now, you come back and you're like, this was one of the best shows of the year? Do you see that happening?
I hope that. I think it's possible, definitely. I think that maybe they just didn't think a pilot was that important. Like, we were talking about off mic, this feels more, like you said, it feels more like a movie stretched out over 8 episodes. So if that's the case, then yeah, it's not going to have a really great pilot that hooks you, because that's not how most movies start.
Yeah, it's a very immediate res, right? Like, it's very, like, here's the middle. Like, you know what could have helped is, like, a short little crawl type thing.
Yes.
You know, like not like Star Wars, but, like, more like Blade Runner. Blade Runner has an opening crawl. Just some title cards. Yeah, some title cards. Legend.
Mm-hmm.
So Ridley Scott is very familiar with doing crawls.
Yeah.
I don't know why they didn't decide to put a crawl in front of this. I'm going to tell you, I'm very intrigued. I just hope it pays off, because this is from three people who are incredibly talented. You know, you have the writer of Eastern Promises and I think he's the creator of Peaky Blinders, right? Yeah.
Yes, he is.
So, like, and those are both things I love.
Mm-hmm.
You have Ridley Scott coming off of The Martian, and we're really excited about Alien Covenant, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Like, and he's also the guy that made Blade Runner and Alien. So, and then you have Tom Hardy, who's, you know, at this point in his career, I don't think he's ever done a bad performance.
No, I don't think so either.
I mean, he's been bland and stuff. You know, there's that movie with him and Reese Witherspoon and, like,
Where
they're like spies.
War.
Yeah, they're like, they're spies.
With Chris Pine?
Yeah, and he's good in it. He's good. He's fine. He's not, like, bad.
You know, he has retroactively said that he did that movie because everyone always told him that romantic comedies, like, movies were a lot of fun to do. And he did that, and he said it was the most miserable movie he's ever made. He's like, I've never seen... He's like, he said, like, I've never seen a set more, like, you know, joyless than... And he thought it was weird that, like, a movie that's supposed to be, like, fun and, you know, charming wasn't very fun to make.
You know, he should have chosen a better, like, crew to work with. Like,
right.
I mean, I love Reese Witherspoon. I love Chris Pine. I don't have any problem with them. They're, from what I know, they're really good people, right?
Right.
But isn't that a movie directed by Brett Ratner?
I believe so. There's, like, a problem.
Tom Hardy should have been like, well, if I'm going to do a romantic comedy, why don't I do one with someone like Cameron Crowe? Or someone who, even though Cameron Crowe hasn't really directed a great romantic comedy in a long time, you'd think you'd be like, let's do a romantic comedy with someone who, like, actually is, a good director and competent.
Right.
I don't know. Is it Brett Ratner? God. Or is it the guy that made Terminator Salvation?
Is it the
guy that made, like, the Charlie's Angels movies, right?
You know what? Fuck this guy, because I just looked at his IMDb. He just goes by McG.
McG, that's right. The guy that made the Charlie's Angels movie. Yeah. I'll tell you what, he's actually a really good TV producer.
I see that. His top credits are Supernatural, Chuck, and The OC.
Yeah, he's, like, pretty good TV producer. So I'm, like, I'm okay with McG, but you're right. He's got a... I don't know why he calls himself McG.
That's fucking just so douchey and pretentious. I hate it, but...
Yeah, but although I've heard he's the nicer version of Brett Ratner. I heard he's, like, a real chill dude to work with, so...
Well, good. I hope he gets work then, because I hate Brett Ratner, so...
No, I don't hope he gets work. Just stay in TV. He ruined Terminator, right? I mean, Terminator was relatively fine after Rise Against the Machines. Like, that was an okay movie. It wasn't great. It was okay. But then he went and did Terminator Salvation with Christian Bale, and that, like, led to, like, a lot of people not wanting to work with Christian Bale anymore because he had, like, his, like, temper tantrum on set of that movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the movie, right? That's the movie
that's
he had, like, that temper tantrum.
You walk in my fucking light or whatever it is. Yeah, that whole fucking meltdown he had.
You know what's funny? You know what's funny? Because people get so worked up about Christian Bale on that set of that movie. And people forget that Robert Downey Jr. would leave bottles of piss all over the place on sets that weren't using film.
Oh my God.
Like, Robert Downey Jr. said it was he said it was disrespectful of the art of movie making to do digital. And on, like, the set of, like, the Avengers and stuff, he just pissed and left piss around everywhere.
Oh wow,
like,
so that was recent Robert Downey Jr., not like 80s and
90s. Yeah.
Oh wow.
Like, that's, like, fairly recent Robert Downey Jr. I mean, he's a very fascinating individual who kind of doesn't give a fuck.
Well, and, like, the whole thing with Christian Bale and that, like, meltdown is, like, His just happened to be recorded. Do you know how many people probably freaked out for lesser things that just never got recorded?
You know, speaking of Tom Hardy, you know, I've heard nothing but good things about him as a person from people who've, like, worked with him before, but, like, talked to Charlize Theron about Tom Hardy, and they fucking hate each other.
Really?
Apparently they couldn't stand each other. And, like, Charlize Theron... thought he was just cocky and full of shit and, like, just wasn't worth the acclaim people threw at him. And, like, he didn't like her. And they had a terrible time working on Mad Max.
Oh, wow.
But then you also have to think into perspective, that was a troubled shoot.
Yeah.
That went on for years longer than it was supposed to.
Right.
And, like, it was also in the hottest desert on the face of the earth.
And they're wearing, so leather.
Leather and, like, prosthetics and stuff. So, and they're doing, like, action scenes where there's, like, explosions and shit. So, I would assume a lot of that is, like, you know, friction on the set type thing.
Right. Charlize Theron's always been one of my favorites, too, but she's been making some questionable choices in the past couple years, so...
Oh, I think she's so on fire right now.
I like her, but she'll do like four great movies in a row, and then do one. And you're like, oh, okay, all right. But then she always finds her way back, though. You know, even when she does something bad.
Yeah, I guess. Well, she's beyond reproach at this point. She's, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, lest we forget, Robert Downey Jr. or Robert De Niro did fucking Dirty Grandpa. speaking of which, I would love to see like Meryl Streep do Dirty Grandma.
That would totally be amazing. See that.
I would totally see that movie.
I would love that.
I guess we didn't really have much to talk about with Taboo, other than like it was kind of not. Like, I'll be honest. I didn't know anything about it other than you told me it has Tom Hardy in it and I should watch it.
That was all I knew about it too. And I was like, because the trailers don't tell you anything. They tell you nothing. And so I was like, I don't know. It's like. Period England Tom Hardy, I guess, but it's called Taboo. Like, that was all I could get out of it.
that's a really weird name for a show that's about like Native Americans.
Exactly.
And, like,
it doesn't make sense.
It's I'm telling you, it's all about the incest. It's all about the incest.
But was that as much of a taboo back then as it would be now?
I think so. You gotta think in like high British society, incest. I mean,
there's a lot of royal families that bred within the family, though.
But those are royalty. That's not like aristocrats and, you know, Plutarchs and stuff. I do want to point out that Tom Hardy's sibling / love interest on the show is played by none other than Una Chaplin, who is Charlie Chaplin's great, 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 great granddaughter.
Awesome.
She's also, cool. I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but she played the wife to the late Rob Stark.
Yes, Talisa from Volantis.
Yeah. Who was also late, by the way. She also died.
Yeah.
Spoilers for Game of Thrones. No, I'm just kidding. But I'm always really excited to see her. I think she's a very interesting performer.
Yeah, I think so too.
She's got a very interesting, expressive face.
Yeah, she really does.
And I didn't know that she was related to Charlie Chaplin until I was told that the other day. And I was like, awesome. Oh, well, that makes sense. So is there anything else you want to talk about with that show?
No, I hope it, like, really smacks me in the face and picks up speed so that it doesn't feel like homework, but, yeah, that's it.
I kind of feel you on that one. All right, we're going to talk about a movie that came out a couple weeks ago at this point, so it's a little bit of a belated discussion. But you have been wanting to talk about this movie on the show for a while, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You want to tell us about a movie you just saw?
Yeah, so I finally saw, Space Titanic Passengers.
Hello.
Is he asking me on a date?
She didn't seem that impressed.
Clean up pretty good yourself.
You two look fine this evening.
We're on a date.
Very nice.
Took you long enough to ask. So, why did you give up your life on Earth? We boarded the Avalon with a destination. 120-year hibernation means we'll wake up in a new century on a new planet. But a year ago, everything changed.
Hello? Anybody here?
Hello? Do you know what's going on? Nobody else is awake.
I think something went wrong with the hibernation pods. We woke up too soon. 9 years too soon.
This can't be happening.
We have to go back to sleep.
We can't.
Aurora, we love you!
Something's wrong. Something big.
What do we do now?
Do you trust me? This ship is gonna go. I have to do this.
No! You die, I die!
There's something I have to tell you. There's a reason we woke up early.
And this movie made me feel gross. it's not terrible. It is not like an awful movie by any means. It is not like garbage, and it's not, you know, completely unwatchable, but it's not good.
I completely share your sentiments, and I think I probably suggested some of them myself on when I talked about it like a week or two ago. I can't remember.
Yeah, like it's not. It's a watchable movie, but it's very disappointing and unsatisfying, and it tries to normalize things we shouldn't normalize, and it, like, the story really falls apart in the third act, I think, for me.
Yeah, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you thought about the movie, and then I'll kind of add in a little bit when I can, and then we'll break for spoilers, and then we'll just really do a real discussion on, like, kind of our problem, I think pretty much just our problem with the central conceit.
Right.
And how they handle it.
Exactly. So this movie, and this is like $150 million budget for this movie?
At least.
And it doesn't look like it to me. Like, there are parts that look nice, but, like, the galaxies and the space, like, landscape, for lack of a better term, does not look that pretty. And this takes place in, like, three rooms on a spaceship. So, like, you know, there wasn't that much set design, I don't feel like. But, so, Jennifer Lawrence, Chris Pratt in the future, they're going to repopulate a new planet called Homestead 2, which is, like, I guess this is supposed to be a company, kind of what, like, Elon Musk or Richard Branson want to do in the future, where you buy a ticket and you move to this new planet. They put you into a sleep, and you sleep for the whole trip, because it's, like, a hundred some years or something like that to get there.
I think so. It's like 120 something years travel or something.
Right.
Because they wake up 90 years too soon, and I think they were asleep for like 30 years.
Right.
Or something like that. Like, they haven't even left like the solar system or something. I can't remember what.
So it's basically just like a bottle movie to keep Chris Pratt and Jennifer Lawrence, these two like huge mega stars that have never really done anything together. It's like, it's an excuse to get them together, basically. I'm just trying to think of how to approach this without getting spoilery, but it's...
Well, you can spoil, I think, the general premise. I mean, that's...
Right.
I mean, I meant more like a spoilers of, like, the plot details. Like, you can go ahead and tell them, like, the marketing hid
the
general
lied.
Premise.
Yeah, it's
it completely
lied.
Hid the general premise of the movie, which is that, and if you don't mind me saying the general premise of this movie is that Chris Pratt wakes up on there's a space iceberg, if you will. they go through like an asteroid belt or something, and you know, gravitational pull, some space debris shoots through the ship and blows up whatever was keeping just Chris Pratt's pod asleep. So only his pod gets fucked, which is really kind of hard to like. If you know anything about electricity and how electricity works, you're like,
you know anything about anything.
That doesn't really work, but okay. So he's the only one who wakes up, and he's awake for about a year.
Mm-hmm.
And you spend about 20 minutes with him. I think it's like 20, 30 minutes with him.
Long.
Just kind of. You think that's too long?
Yeah. I was like, I get it. He's alone. And, like,
Well, they got to show him, like, because you got to buy that he makes the choice he's going to make, which is
right.
After about a year, he stumbles upon Jennifer Lawrence's cryo chamber thing.
Which I don't understand how it took him that long. Because, like, you know,
he's it's a big ship. It's a big ship.
But I mean, that's where he popped up. Like, they were all in the same room, right? Weren't all the people?
No,
in the
they're
same
on
room?
All. There's four. I think there's three or four decks.
Oh, wait, that's right. Yeah, because that's a spoiler right? Later. We'll get to that. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a bunch of different decks and stuff, and there's different classes. And he's from, like, a blue collar class. She's from more of a bougie class, right? She's more of a upscale.
This isn't spoilery because it's,
no, this is the premise of the movie.
Yeah,
this is this is, and I've been sitting on this for like 6 years because the script came out 9 years ago.
Right, but here's I had a question about that because this is something I kind of had a problem with. So we find out.
Yeah, go for it.
We find out when she wakes up that you know she's like a gold class passenger, right? And he's not.
Yes.
And we know that he's an engineer and she's a writer. Now, was this mentioned, because I might have missed it if it was, but she mentioned something about how, like, he must not have paid for his full ticket because he's, like, a desired working class, which totally makes sense. If you're repopulating a new planet, you want engineers. That makes sense. She's a writer, and she said she's doing it basically to just, like, write about the experience. Now, did she make any clarification of whether or not she paid for her ticket or, like, her job was paying for it?
The way I interpreted her talking about her motive. So first of all, we have to tell the audience here, after that year period and he stumbles on her chamber thing, he like mulls over it for like a couple of months and just decides to wake her the fuck up.
Mm-hmm.
And then he plays it off as if they both, like her thing just broke on its own. Because she's not an engineer, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
What I interpreted from her thing was that her father was a Pulitzer Prize winning author and very fairly wealthy, and that she kind of inherited a lot of that wealth and fame and became famous and wealthy and a sought after writer on her own.
Gotcha. Okay.
And so she kind of comes from like that, not rich, but like I can afford a plane ticket in first class rung.
Right.
Like, it's not rich, but it's not poor, you know what I mean? It's not...
Right.
She's not starving.
Here's my issue with this, though, is that, like, I get that they mentioned that, like, you know, you get a discount on your ticket if you're desired, like, trade or whatever. But, like, from the way that... This is just, like, a nitpicky thing about the way the company operates, but, like, engineers are kind of really fucking valuable to a new place like that. Wouldn't you, if you're going to give them a discount ticket, why would you not give them, like, a gold-level thing and make them comfortable and make them happy? And, you know, why is a fucking writer going gold class and an engineer is, like, third class or whatever, you know?
Yeah, that is something that has... You know, I have a deeper issue, which is I don't understand why Jennifer Lawrence couldn't have been the engineer. And Chris Pratt, I think Chris Pratt, his personality, his acting style, makes more sense to be the rich son of some crazy writer.
Right.
And then, like, be a very charismatic writer. Like, I just feel like his personality, and Jennifer Lawrence to me seems, I mean, she's very smart. So, like, we've talked about it before. She's a very smart, very talented actress who can play kind of anything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, sometimes to the detriment of the movies she's in.
Right.
Like, they casted her when she's 20 years too young to be in the movie Joy.
Yeah.
She's 20 years too young to play that character, and yet she's so talented they cast her anyway. I mean, really, they just casted her because they wanted to work with Jennifer Lawrence again.
Right.
And they made the movie around her.
Exactly.
But she could have earned that part. She's a very talented, beyond her years, actress. I just think that she would have been a better fit for an engineer than he was. I didn't buy a lot of his, and I felt like it was sexism in its own way, where it's like, oh, he gets to be the engineer because we need to be able to communicate. He's good at, like, building computers and, like,
mm-hmm.
figuring out the ship because the girl couldn't do that. And it just kind of bothered me right off the gate, or right out of the gate, I should say. Kind of like I really hated that they made Chris Pratt the Indiana Jones archetype in Jurassic World, and they made Bryce Dallas Howard the I need to learn how to be a woman,
right.
or whatever the fuck character she was.
My life has no meaning until I decide to have children.
Yeah, which I hated.
Right.
I loved her in the movie, but I mean, I hated that. I mean, I guess I didn't. I don't know. I like her as a person, and I guess I enjoyed the movie because she was in it. But I hate that movie, though. Yeah, I don't know.
And I get that, like, the point is supposed to be that, like, rich people can buy their way into whatever. But, like, let's be realistic. Let's be realistic here. A writer is useless in this new society. You know, like.
Yeah, and her journey is useless because it's not useless. It is, but it's useless if that makes sense because. Yeah. She's only going on it because she wants to be the first writer to write, to be like, well, I wrote a little bit before I went on this 120-year journey, and I'm going to write about my experience and what the world was when I got to this other place and then come back.
That's what I was saying. Was her plan to come back?
You know, yeah. She says her ticket's is a round trip, right? So she's going there and coming back. She wanted to document what the world was like when she left and then come get to the new world, write about what the new world was like for a year, and then come back and then write about how the world had changed and moved forward. I mean,
so
could you imagine
come back
that?
Like a good 300 years later.
Yeah, could you imagine what that would be like to have someone who made that 300-year trek?
Like, yeah, I mean, that would be insane. That's like, I can appreciate the ambition in that, but that's too bad that wasn't the story in this movie.
that's like, it's like Robert Rodriguez making that movie with Mel Gibson. Was it Mel Gibson or something? Or no, he made a movie with somebody, Vince Vaughn, maybe? I don't know. Which is not going to be viewed for like 900 years or something like that. Or,
that's cool.
Or something like, it's like 100 years or something, I don't know. It's a movie they made that's going to sit in, like, a fucking time capsule or something.
I'm down. That sounds awesome.
I mean, I guess. I don't know.
Assuming it's good. Watch it. What if it's, like, a total turd of a movie, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I would assume it is just because of who made it. Robert Rodriguez hasn't made a good movie in, like, a decade at least.
Oh, that's true. It has been that long, hasn't it?
It's been that long. Sin City for me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Machete is fine, but it's a joke that runs on too long. He's
become a joke machine.
Yeah, for sure. He's made like 4 or 5 of those fucking Spy Kids movies. this movie, we might as well just break for the spoilers.
All right,
so.
Spoiler time.
Obi-Wan never told you what happened to your father.
California, stay away from here. Stay away from here now. Don't come in here.
Whatever you hear, stay away.
Secret, but you won't find it because, of course, you're not really looking. You don't really want to work it out. You want to be fooled.
All right, go on.
All right, so this movie has a real problem with trying to legitimize Stockholm Syndrome as a romantic relationship.
Yeah, I would agree.
I don't want to say it's an issue of consent, because it kind of is, but that's not the central issue. Because for me, it doesn't become about consent because of the end. The end is totally, like, what makes it Stockholm Syndrome for me. This movie, I think, has an absolutely terrible ending. I think the ending is probably one of the worst things about this movie.
Yeah, I would agree with you.
So, to get into it, yeah, so Chris Pratt basically stalks her. As much as you can stalk someone who's, you know, in a sleep chamber on a spaceship. He, like, watches all the videos about her, and, like, he gets, like, the stuff that he says to the bartender robot about, like, oh, I just love the way she laughs and shit like that, that comes off really creepy to me. Which, it's not intended to be. We're supposed to, like, root for them and want them to be together, but it's really hard to do that knowing he murders her, essentially.
I want to take a second and kind of talk about explain kind of why I think what you're describing is a problem in the movie, and talk about the history of this production. So, like, a lot of people don't know, this is written by, what's his name? The guy that did the original version of Prometheus.
Oh.
You know,
I can't remember what his name is.
He wrote on Doctor Strange. I don't have his name right here with me, but basically that writer, this is his first script. It's Passengers, and it was pitched as Space Titanic, And it used to have Keanu Reeves and I think Rachel Weisz, if I remember correctly.
I believe it was, oh, fuck, I just read this too. Hold on, let me look it up real quick.
But, like, when you understand that Keanu Reeves was originally intended to be that character,
right,
it totally changes how you perceive that character would have been presented. Because Keanu's not the charismatic actor.
Emily Blunt.
It would have been. I think it would have been really cool.
And they're age appropriate, unlike this pairing.
Yeah, they're contemporaries.
Yeah.
Yeah, what's so fascinating about that idea is that Keanu Reeves is he's just not charismatic. He is and he isn't. Does that make any sense?
But I would have liked to see him deal with isolation.
Yeah, you would have bought much more of the psychological unhingedness
of the
character, and you would have been dialed in to the crazy, like, I'm becoming obsessed with waking up this person. Because I'm tired of being alone. You would have bought that because you've been like, oh my god, he's legitimately crazy, and this is a bad idea. Mm-hmm. Like, you shouldn't wake her up. Instead, when you have the likable Chris Pratt, you're like, oh well, she's gonna fall in love with Chris Pratt. Like, come on. I mean, he's gorgeous and he's funny. You're gonna like him. Just don't ask how you got there.
Yeah, the thing. I never really bought his isolation and his loneliness. He still was too upbeat and cheery even throughout that, I thought. You know, that's like, it's the worst fake beard. And the like, hair was so bad too.
Well, the beard was so obviously a fake beard.
Right.
Because I think it's because they saw his real beard, which isn't like full in the cheeks.
Yeah.
And they're like, we want like a full, like, traditional caveman beard. Yeah. Which bums me out, because any chance you get to have an actor's real facial hair just helps sell the performance better anyway.
Right.
Because they're like, I know how to act in my own beard.
Mm-hmm.
You want to keep going then? I just wanted to like lay the foundation of why this is such a big criticism, I think, from me and probably from you, which is that Chris Pratt is wildly miscast.
Right. He's totally miscast. Like, this movie, the first 30 minutes could have been really emotional and really impactful, watching this man be alone, realizing he's going to die of natural causes in 90 years on this ship alone. That should be something that's really heavy and really, like, makes us feel sympathetic for him. But it's, I don't want to say it's played for comedy, but it is pretty comical in most parts. Chris Pratt plays a lot of it like, oh, here we go again. But the one thing I noticed that drove me crazy, because I thought it was going to pay off and it didn't, was, did you notice that the Martin Sheen, who plays the, like, android bartender, the way he's dressed and the way the bar is designed is exactly the same as Lloyd the bartender in the bar in The Shining?
It's also shot the same way. They did that intentionally.
But
from what I understand, it's intentionally meant to be an echo of The Shining, to be shorthand for, like, oh, he's gonna go nuts.
But
like, that's what
really.
It's supposed to be, but he doesn't really exactly.
And that's what it got my hopes up, being like, oh, we're going to see him crack and see some weird Shining. Like, if this was The Shining in space on a ship, it would have been awesome.
Much more interesting movie, by the way.
Yep.
That would be so much more interesting.
Yeah. And they kind of set it up like, ooh, it's getting spooky, it's going to go this way, and then it doesn't. This movie, like, there's so many more ways it could have departed from where it was and become interesting, and it doesn't. Like, it had so many exit ramps to be more interesting, and it passed all of them.
Well, it wanted to become Sunshine in the last 30 minutes, right?
Where there's
like a real, or Titanic even, mm-hmm. where there's a real danger, now we have to deal with something. And I fucking hated how they introduced Lawrence Fishburne, like, the last 20 minutes.
So terrible.
And they have that great moment where he realizes, like, there's that really awesome scene where they hold Chris Pratt accountable,
mm-hmm.
and, like, Jennifer Lawrence, like, practically beats the living shit out of him. I thought that was so dope.
I thought it looked, like, bad, though.
You thought it looked bad?
I thought the fake punching and kicking, like, when it's the shot where his back is to the screen, like, the far shots, not the close shots, the far shots of, like, her punching and kicking him didn't look good to me.
Are we talking about the same scene where, like,
he's in the bed?
She beats him up in the middle of the night?
Yeah.
I thought that was really effective, like, and, like, brutal.
I just thought they looked like obviously fake kicks and punches in the far shots.
Oh, wow. I thought it was pretty convincing.
I thought the close shots were good, but the far ones weren't.
She looked fucking pissed.
Yeah, no, she did.
And she has every right to be. I think walking out of the movie, I had this idea for what I thought would have been a better ending, which is Chris Pratt dies trying to save their lives.
Mm-hmm.
She realizes, I guess I understand why he woke me up, but she doesn't forgive him, but she understands why he woke her up. And she's left with the choice. Yeah, that's kind of how it's set up. It kind of sets up to do that. And what I thought would have been more interesting is, well, now she has a realization, which is now she's alone on this ship that they just fixed, and she's going to be there for the rest of her life. And I thought it would have been a really powerful moment to end right where she's about to wake someone else up, to make her now understand why he did what he did, and then basically make the same mistake.
Oh, that instead, would have been so great.
Like, it would have been great, because then it's not about him getting what he wants. It's about her taking agency in accepting her situation and then coming to terms with it on her own, you know?
Yeah, the worst thing about this horrible message this movie sends is that there are no consequences for his actions.
I mean, she almost beat the shit out of him. That's it. That's, like, all the movie does.
Yeah, there's no stakes. Like, there's no stakes to anything in this movie, because even when you think he's going to die, he doesn't.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't.
He's right back to normal.
And it's like 10 minutes. It's like super long. I'm like, just let him die. Yeah. Just let him die, because this is bad.
Well, and it's so, to me, it was so frustrating to see her be so emotionally upset that he was dying. No, you should be like, fuck you, you know? Instead, yeah, she was
5 minutes,
upset.
5 minutes before that whole actions beat starts, she's like, you know what he did to me, right? Like, he's a murderer. She literally called him a murderer 5 minutes before the action beat started happening.
And then she's sobbing because he's
dying.
I
love you. I need you to live. I can't live without you or whatever. I'm like, you just called him a murderer, bro. Like, yeah, it's a very weird fucking movie. And look, I think we talked about it at the top. You know, I really like Chris Pratt. I really like Jennifer Lawrence. Jennifer Lawrence is usually pretty good about picking material. Chris Pratt, I don't think is.
No, I think he takes everything.
Well, I think he's at that place where he doesn't really know exactly what he wants to be himself. I mean, when he started doing movies, he was on TV, of course, on Parks and Rec. But when he made his leap to movies, what was the first time anyone ever really saw him in? Zero Dark Thirty. And he was kind of trying to make himself more of a dramatic, serious actor, right?
Mm-hmm.
And people were kind of like just not buying it because it's Burt Macklin. You know,
right,
in a lot of people's
exactly.
minds. And then he tapped into Star-Lord, and it's like, oh my god, that's what he is. He's fucking Indiana Jones. And then he became the shortlist for Indiana Jones reboot. You know, everyone's like, oh, he's Indiana Jones. But this year, he's been in two movies this year, if I'm correct. Am I correct?
I think
two movies?
So.
This and Magnificent Seven. And both movies, he's charismatic and funny in, but the roles are not for him. Like, he takes on these darker roles and then plays Chris Pratt. And it's kind of like, why are you – like, in the Magnificent Seven, he basically plays a murderer who's, like, the worst of the worst in the group. He's, like, legitimately just kind of, like, a bad guy.
Seriously, that makes no sense for him.
Yeah, I know. I know. I mean, he's played as Chris Pratt. That's the problem. It's the wrong character for the right actor. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because he's super charismatic. Like, he's once-in-a-lifetime charismatic. Like, there's a reason he's a movie star out of Guardians of the Galaxy. And it has nothing to do with how awesome Guardians of the Galaxy is. It has everything to do with how awesome Chris Pratt is.
Yeah.
Like, that movie wouldn't have been a huge hit if it starred anyone else. Like, don't even change any of the other actors. Just change him, put Keanu in or something. Like, that movie is not a huge hit. It just isn't. And I think I just don't think he understands what movies he's best for yet. And I kind of wish he'd figure that shit out.
Right.
You know, like, he's awesome in movies like Guardians of the Galaxy. He'd be a great sidekick to a really serious, dark character. You know what I mean?
Right.
He's just not these dark characters he wants to play who have, like, unhingedness or, like, are weird. I just don't buy it. I don't know.
So another thing about this movie that the marketing plays up a lot that I thought was definitely manipulated was, so you see in a lot of the trailers, they play up like the romance and the sex scenes between them a lot. Like you see that footage of her like crawling across the cafeteria.
The table, right?
A bunch. Yeah. Okay. The sex scenes in this movie are almost non-existent. Like there's nothing.
Yeah.
You don't see anything. Like you see them making out a little bit. That's it. And then them in bed after. And that's it.
You know, if this would have been Emmanuel in space, I think it would have been better.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're familiar with Emmanuel, the series of, like, 80s, 90s hardcore porn sci-fi movies.
I mean, why not? You're made. In space.
Like, yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, this movie would have been so much better. I mean, we also have to talk about Morten Tildum directed this, coming off of The Imitation Game, which was okay. It was Oscar bait. It had a really good series of performances by Keira Knightley and Benedict Cumberbatch, but it was just an okay movie. I mean, I don't know. That's all I can say about it. Like, he's a boring director, and he made a boring, sexist movie.
This movie is really boring, and it's, like, I couldn't believe for how much money they put into this, how visually boring it is, too.
Well, that happens if you don't hire someone who's a visual director, and then you give them $150 million to make a movie.
Where did it go?
Yeah, I'm on the same boat, you know? I mean, yeah, I don't know. It's the Walmart of movies.
It really is. It's bland and generic and broad brush and, yeah.
And sexist. And grossly sexist.
It made me feel gross. Like, this movie made me, like, my skin crawl a little bit.
It should. It's a gross movie. I mean, Chris Pratt basically murders this girl, but gets to keep her for the rest of his life with only one moment of, like, retribution, and then, like,
it gets erased.
He gets to be a superhero again. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like,
yeah, we should explain this movie. I want to talk about Lawrence Fishburne for a second, and we can talk about
yeah, I mean, why not?
So he's Lawrence only in Fishburne 5 minutes. Is in it for an info dump and for to provide them with a way to heal Chris Pratt later. That's it. That's all he does.
Yeah, pretty much.
Big waste of Lawrence Fishburne. but the end of this movie, it ends with her. So she heals him, they're both fine, they fix the ship, everything's awesome. She decides to just stay alive and live with him for the rest of the 90 years. And that's it. That's how it fucking ends. It's so terrible. I hate it so much.
Yeah, it's a really, it's funny because the whole premise, which is she's asleep and he's like the prince that needs to wake her up, is very Snow White. And then you have the story, which is Titanic in space. And I think that's a really bad pairing. Because you have, like, the tragic... And it's only a bad pairing because they don't know how to land the movie. Like, if Chris Pratt put her in the pod against her will or something, but allow her, like, she agreed to go in the pod, and she went to sleep, and then woke up with the rest of everybody, and you still have the greenery and all that stuff that happens, like, that would be a good ending to a relatively sexist, boring movie.
Right.
Because at least she gets to live her life. You know what I mean?
Exactly. I think you said before, and I think this is a really good way to sum it up, is that he gets everything he wants with no consequences, and that is the fatal flaw of this movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, there's not much else I can really add to it.
Yeah.
It's a movie I don't really like talking about, to be honest, because it's kind of garbage. It's just garbage. Yeah, it's boring. It's sexist. It's the worst parts of Trump America, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, don't go see it. Definitely don't spend money on it.
Yeah, I think it was a hit, too. That's the funny thing. I think it was a minor hit.
I looked it up. The only thing that put it over was international.
Okay, so it was a failure here?
It was, yeah. It came in, like, I think 20 to 30 million under budget here. And international put it up to like 210 million. So it made 210 million, but it cost 150 million. So it's not,
so it's they didn't not make any that money. Much. They didn't make any money at all.
No.
Because you got to think they got to, so like how box office works is they have to make the production budget back. So they have to make the production budget and then the production budget over, right?
Right.
That way they can be like, well, we made our production budget back. Mm-hmm. They covered their expense and then made that money back. But they also have to split that with the movie theaters, and like 30 to 40% of it goes to movie theaters. I think it's like 30%.
Right.
Because Disney is really responsible for getting it less and less. Disney and George Lucas. So, I mean, they're not making any money off this fucking movie. It's, even internationally. Like,
its opening weekend was especially terrible, too.
It opened up right after Rogue One, though. That's the thing I think killed it, right?
Yeah, I mean, it came, but here's the thing, it came in third place, and its numbers were still not great. Like, so it opened up opening weekend, and the studio was coming out saying, no, it's going to be a heavy hitter. They projected it to do $35 million opening weekend, and it did $15
million. Oh, that's rough. That's $15 lower than they predicted. That's like $20 lower than they predicted, right?
Yeah. So, $15 million is, coming in third behind Rogue One and Sing at $15 million. Coming in third place, your number should be higher than that still.
I mean, on Christmas Day, or Christmas week or whatever, of course.
Well, and the six-day total for Christmas included in that opening weekend and everything was $30 million.
That's rough. That's not good. That is really rough.
Yeah, and so if you don't make it your opening weekend, you're going to have a hard time moving it up anywhere from that, so...
All right, so, you know what? Don't go see this movie if you're listening to this. You probably haven't because it's been out for like a month at this point. Don't go see it, though. Don't rent it. Don't Netflix it. Don't Redbox it. It's a piece of junk that you don't need to put your eyes in front of. Get it.
Even for the celebrity pairing, it's not worth it.
It just isn't. Yeah, I totally agree. It really isn't for that pairing. All right, let's go on to our final segment of the evening. This is going to be a shorter episode than I think a lot of people are used to the last couple weeks, where we've been like 3 hours every episode. We got some news this week.
We know the air is unfit to breathe and our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes, as if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to riot. I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value. I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
Did you want me to start?
Yeah, go ahead, start.
All right, so speaking of box office, we were just talking about, so 2017 is already off to a really, really strange start for box office. We've had some really, like, allegedly big movies with big directors come out that have not been doing very well. We talked about briefly earlier about how Silence is on track to be Martin Scorsese's lowest grossing film of all his films, which is really surprising, but then like we were talking about earlier with the marketing and stuff and the kind of complex movie it is, maybe it's not that surprising. But something that I found to be downright shocking was that Ben Affleck's new movie, Live by Night, didn't even make the top 10 its opening weekend.
And I'm glad it didn't. I haven't seen it yet, but everything I hear is it's the worst movie he's ever directed.
Oh, wow.
And I've heard that the book is amazing, and that he basically gutted it. Like, all the things that made it amazing, he took them out.
That's unfortunate. But if you're not making the top 10 your opening week, you might as well pull it from the theaters.
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to be in theaters much longer.
No.
I think it has a 30%, and 24 to 30% on Rotten Tomatoes right now. It's like the worst thing he's made as a director. It's the worst thing he's been in over 15 years, I think. It's like, it's pretty bad. It's pretty rough, and he's taken it pretty rough. I mean, the critical reaction to Live by Night is literally what caused him to pause on that Batman movie.
That's, he's having a rough, like, year, isn't he? Because he had Batman vs. Superman, and now this, and
Suicide Squad, because he's in that, too.
Yeah, he's having a rough year.
I mean, in his defense, Batman vs. Superman Suicide Squad aren't his fault.
Right, exactly.
And
that's
he's the best thing in Batman vs. Superman.
Mm-hmm.
With Gal Gadot, I'm willing to cut her some slack, even though her character isn't a character. They never even say Wonder Woman in the movie.
Right.
We'll whatever.
Reserve judgment until we see her Wonder Woman movie. Then we'll
yeah, yeah, which I'm already hearing is a piece of trash. So, I mean, here we go. Ugh. We're going through it all over again.
And then a more positive box office news, Hidden Figures is still holding number one, and it is the first female-fronted movie to keep a number one spot for as many weeks as it has. I don't know if it's two or three now, since 2011. So, awesome. Not only women, but women of color. I think that's a really good way to start 2017.
And what movie did it dethrone?
That I don't know.
Fucking Star Wars Rogue One,
did
baby.
Did really? That's awesome.
Which is also a female-fronted movie. So I think that's a good sign that things are changing. That slowly but surely in Trump America, which hasn't even begun but is kind of beginning, as of like today or tomorrow or when 27th to 27th, right?
Yeah.
Next week.
No, it's Friday. It's
Fuck it.
Yeah.
Who cares? I'm not going to go to it.
Yeah.
Who cares about Trump? We do, obviously. Yeah, I mean, I saw Hidden Figures. I forgot to mention that. I did last week's podcast, right?
Yeah, yeah. You talked about it. You said it was really pleasantly good.
Yeah, it was pleasant. It was a very good, pleasant movie. It's not very great. It's just good. It's very fun. I'm glad it did number one at the box office. And I'm glad that it's sharing its time with Rogue One, which... a movie that we both, I think, have soured on, but like...
I honestly, the more I think about it, the more I sour on it.
Yeah, I know. That's the big problem with that movie. Mm-hmm. It's not The Force Awakens, where I'm like, oh, I have problems with it the more I think about it.
Right.
The Force Awakens is still a fun, fucking entertaining movie.
I still love that movie.
I still love that movie, too.
It warms my heart, you know? Like...
Exactly, exactly. Whereas with Rogue One, it's legitimately like, this is actually a movie that blew me away with the cool things that are in it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, the farther away from it I get and the more I think about it, the more I talk about it, the more I'm like, this might be one of the worst movies I've seen in a while.
Right.
Like, or not worst movies, but just, like, disappointing movies.
Yeah, so I had one other piece of
news, too.
So Scream Factory, who does a lot of the really nice collectible Blu-ray releases of cult movies and horror movies, is producing a animated H.P. Lovecraft movie, and they announced some of the cast this week. Doug Bradley, who is most well-known for playing Pinhead in Hellraiser, Jeffrey Combs, Dr. Herbert West in Reanimator, and Mark Hamill are all going to be doing voice acting in this movie. So I think that's pretty awesome. I'm really excited to see that, and I really hope it's going to be good. So we'll keep following that and see where that goes.
Yeah, that's a pretty exciting thing. I think you... are you pretty excited? They also announced they're doing a Phantasm box set.
Yeah, I did hear about the Phantasm box set. I was a little disappointed because the one Arrow Video put out in the UK is way nicer, but it's Region B locked, so I have to either get a region-specific player or all-region player or buy the American box set, which isn't nearly as cool.
Let's be real. Arrow puts out way better versions of their movies than Scream Factory. Scream Factory gets a lot of press in America for being like a cool company, but Arrow and Criterion are the top of the line.
Well,
Arrow
just, like,
does cool packaging.
Yeah,
they do cool boxes. Like, they have that Hellraiser Books of Blood, or was it the trilogy box set?
Mm-hmm.
That is one of the most beautiful box sets I've seen in a long fucking time.
Well, it's like the Phantasm box set that Arrow Video is putting out actually is like a pedestal with the silver spear on it, and like the pedestal opens up and the discs are in there. Whereas, as far as we know, I've only seen the cover art of the American one. It's just like a picture of the tall man. And that's all we've gotten. So that tells me we're not getting a cool box set.
Yeah, no, I doubt it. I mean, I'll be honest. I've seen all the other Scream Factory boxes. I don't know if you have any of their movies.
I have a lot of their movies.
Okay.
And one thing that they're doing in 2017, which probably won't last because it's probably not cost effective, but what they're starting to do is because Scream Factory, like, the one thing they do is they do commission artists to do really cool, like, cover art design, but that's all they have going for them. Like, that's the reason why I buy them. But what they're doing now is when you buy a Blu-ray from them, they're going to include, like, a rolled 18x24 poster of that art.
Oh, okay.
So that's pretty cool, but I don't see that being cost-effective and being able to keep that up, so I bet they'll do it for, like, four movies and then stop.
That is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
That is pretty cool. So is that it? Was that all you have for news?
Yep, that's all I've got.
Okay. I've got a couple things. I'm going to start with the biggest one right off the bat. Going against their corporate policy, Lucasfilm has announced they are not going to be CGI Leia in the future. There will never be another CGI Leia, from what I understand, with the notable exception being Carrie Fisher in Rogue One. But they're not going to be doing episode 9 with like a CGI Leia. So that takes off one of two three options off the table right off the bat. Right now, Colin Trevorrow's meeting with Kathleen Kennedy and they're having their whole summit thing. And that this letter is kind of part of all that. But he's meeting with her right now and they're breaking down what are they going to do, because they have a long time. A lot of people don't realize episode 8 was supposed to be out this May, and so they filmed it earlier than they felt they were going to film if it was coming out in December.
Right.
And now it is coming out in December, but they have an additional 6 to 9 months, essentially, and that release schedule has all of the other movies up 6 to 8 months, essentially, for each movie. So Han Solo's currently shooting, and that's supposed to be coming out next summer, but from what I've heard, they're going to be announcing in a couple weeks that movie is going to be coming out in December of 2018 instead of summer 2018, because it's supposed to be coming out in the summer of 2018 to commemorate the 40th anniversary of Star Wars, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, or something like that. It's like some anniversary, but I keep hearing that Disney's going to just go say fuck the anniversary and maybe just hold like celebration on the anniversary. You know, anniversaries for these IPs are kind of disappearing. You know, Star Trek had a 50th anniversary, and they didn't bother to put out Star Trek Beyond on the anniversary.
That's insane.
You know what I mean? like it's just weird to me. Like, Disney, same thing. They were kind of like, who cares if we celebrate the 35th anniversary of blah, 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 or the 40th anniversary of blah, blah, blah. They don't care. All they care about is, do they have 6 months of guaranteed money-making? So, but at the very least, you know, we now know that they're not going to be CGI-ing Leia, which is a very contentious piece of debate among fans right now. Some people are for CGI Leia, some people are against it. I think I would have been okay with it if the story and the character needed it, but I'm more than happy that they're not going to bother, because I think it would be also kind of tasteless.
I agree. I think that what's the worst thing, a movie writer's worst fear is having to write a character in a way you wouldn't normally, because either the actor is leaving or dying. That's not an ideal situation for anyone. You don't want the real life actor to dictate what happens to characters, you know? Just think about like any TV show you've watched where they've written out a character just because the actor didn't want to do it anymore. It's always terrible. It's never the way the story should go. It never feels natural. It always feels forced. So I think that's a very real fear with this too, is that like, this is going to feel really like ham-fisted, and like it sucks because she'll probably die off screen, I would assume, at this point. Like a planet will blow up, or we'll hear like, or she'll die in a line of dialogue delivered by somebody, you know?
Only I could spoil episode 8 right now. No, I'm just kidding.
But I agree. I think it's even, you know, 2-3 years from now, we're still too close to this for it to not be tasteless. I agree. Like there's no way they could do it and it feel okay. You know?
Yeah. We're 3 years away from episode 9.
Yeah.
So
close.
Like, the difference between this and Tarkin, and Lucasfilm straight up came out and admitted it. Like, Pablo Hidalgo straight up said it. It's been 25 years since Peter Cushing passed away. Well, it's like 23?
Yeah, something like that.
Right? Because 94, mm-hmm. So 23.
Yeah.
So it's 23 years since he passed away. People have kind of moved on.
Right.
And, like, it's more of a novelty that they brought him back than anything else, you know?
Exactly.
Whereas with Carrie, it's like she's been with us for 40 years,
mm-hmm.
as Princess Leia for 40 years. I have heard a number of people suggest that Meryl Streep, who's lifelong friends with Carrie Fisher, is a possibility for Princess Leia if they want to recast. I want to ask you that. How do you feel about a possibility of a recast on the character of Leia? Do you think we should lock that character down to Carrie Fisher, or do you think that the character deserves to continue moving forward, whether Carrie Fisher's playing the character or not?
I hate recasting. I really do. It almost never works out. Even if it's a minor character, I feel like it's just something an audience has a really hard time grappling with. And I feel like Meryl Streep is obviously the best we're going to get, right? Like, she's the best option we could possibly have for a recast, I think. And I think she would do a great job, but it just isn't going to be the same. And I don't know. No matter what, like, nothing's a good option right now. You know, there's not one option that really seems better than the other to me. They all have their, you know, pros and cons.
Yeah, they do. They really do.
If it's absolutely essential to the story to recast her, I would be fine with it.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. If I could talk openly about what I know about Episode 8, I could suggest that there is a possibility of working around her passing away.
Yeah.
Because her role in that movie is very specific. From what I understand, very specific. And they could, if necessary, kill her character in that movie.
Gotcha.
Okay. I feel like they could make that work.
If they're going to, like, if they're going to kill her sometime between 8 and 9, I would rather have it just be an 8 so we can move on and just approach 9 as something new.
I've often said, don't change 8 at all. Like, let whatever scenes Carrie Fisher did be like a vigil for her, essentially, you know? Like, allow that to be her send-off. And then just get out of this mindset that 8, 7, 8, 9 are like 3 or 4 days worth of story. Right. Like, that's the thing that's been bothering me. Like, George Lucas always imagined there's going to be time in between each installment.
Exactly.
There's 3 years in between A New Hope and Empire. There's like 6 months between Empire and Return of the Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the point. The point is, like, that's why the crawl exists.
Well, in the prequel trilogy, there's even more than that, right?
Yeah, between Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones, there's a decade.
Yeah.
And between Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith, there's 3 to 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
Because Anakin is, like, 18 or 19 in Attack of the Clones, and he's, like, mid-20s.
Right.
In Revenge of the Sith. So you have, like, gaps of time, and that's the point of the crawl. George Lucas has always said, there's a reason I have a crawl in front of the story, which is so I don't have to lock myself down to, and then here's the next beat.
And you know, good for him, actually. I know he gets shit on a lot for a lot of different reasons, but that's actually a really insightful thing, and I think that's something other filmmakers could definitely benefit from. I've never actually really thought about the fact that before, and I never really knew that was something he stuck to, but that's good for him. I like that.
No, I'm on the same mind. You know, I have always been very fervently attached to the idea that Episode 8 should be not the next thing, because the problem is, if you do the next day, right, or the next whatever, you have to find some kind of you have to put yourself in the position of writing dialogue that lives up to Mark Hamill as Luke Skywalker hasn't said a single line of dialogue in 36 years. What's the first thing he says to Rey?
Right.
And then you're like, you have to figure out what's the first thing that he can say to Rey that's not going to be, like, ruin the, I don't know, like, you have to live up to that moment, right?
Exactly.
Especially the way Episode 7 ends. And I've always been of the opinion that Rey is the main character of this trilogy, but pull something unique. Do something different with Episode 8. Start it with Kylo or start it with Finn, and then pick up 20 or 30 minutes in with Rey and have the whole story be like 2 years later or something, or like a year later or whatever.
Right.
And then have Rey become like this real hardcore badass who's running around the galaxy with Luke Skywalker doing whatever Luke Skywalker and her are going to be doing.
Oh, man. I can't believe I'm going to say this, but like a really good way to approach Episode 8 would be like have the scene of, you know, Rey and Luke pick up right at the beginning, and, you know, whatever first words he's going to say to her, have that pick up, and then have that just be the prologue, and then do your crawl, and now it's however many years later.
Yeah, that's also an option. I've heard some people flout that as an option, especially because Marvel's been doing this a lot where they do like a pre-scene and then they do the credits. They do like the opening title card for Marvel, right? Like Civil War does that. Right. Guardians of the Galaxy does that. Doctor Strange does that. Yeah, that's a possibility. That's a possibility.
For another prologue in a Star Wars movie, though.
Yeah, I don't see that. I don't know. I mean, I've always thought, leave it a mystery what Luke says to her. Leave everything to do with that time, because I don't want to go through just another Luke on Dagobah.
Yeah,
And that's what this movie's going to be. This movie's going to be Rey and Luke on Dagobah, essentially. I mean, it's Ahch-To in this movie, and you're going to have Kylo and Snoke doing the same thing. So you're literally just gonna watch two of your two main characters training, and that's fascinating for me. Like, I'm really excited about seeing that and seeing new. We've never seen Sith train or Darksiders train other Darksiders,
right?
Since technically Kylo's not a Sith, even though he wants to be one. And I really don't want to get tied down to we're picking up 24 hours later because that's the way The Force Awakens ends. Like, The Force Awakens ending for me doesn't have to be turn the next page. It could be wait till the next book comes out in 4 years. You know, like,
spoken like a true reader of George R. R. Martin.
Yeah, right. Well, George's books. Is there a lot of? I can't remember. But there's not a whole lot of time.
No, there isn't. It's just hard to track because every chapter is a different character. So sometimes it's hard to tell.
And it takes a long time to travel in his books.
Yes, exactly.
Not in the show though.
No, you can teleport in the show if you're Varys or Littlefinger.
So that's the big news item that I had. Another item, which I think we could do a whole show on, is surprising basically the entire world. Victor Salva gets to make Jeepers Creepers 3 again.
God, I hate this so much.
Which I know, right? This project was started late 2014, early 2015, and then he put a casting call out asking for an 18-year-old actress to play a 13-year-old character dealing with the trauma of being abused by a grandfatherly character. That was the character that, like, literally he made a movie about his own victim, basically.
Oh, my God.
Like, except the victim would be a girl in this situation, even though he molested boys.
Yeah.
Look, I obviously I can tell you don't really care for Victor Salva either.
No, I honestly don't even think the movies are that good. I really don't. And they're definitely not worth what he has done to the world.
Yeah, you know, the more distance and the more I think about the Jeepers Creepers movies, they're totally an allegory for pedophilia.
Oh, yeah.
Right? They're about this weird fucking demon character who, like, only seems to prey on boys. And in the first movie, preys on a boy who, you know, I didn't realize it as a kid, but that character Derry is, like, coded gay, right? I mean, he's got that weird flower tattoo above his navel.
Yep.
And he's got, like, he's kind of just weirdly effeminate in that movie, but not effeminate at the same time. Like, am I reading it right? Like, he's got kind of, like, a prepubescent quality to him.
No, I totally get that.
Like, he wears, like, that light green t-shirt, I think, and he's got, like, the bowl cut, like he's never learned how to cut his hair. Like, he's got a very
so true.
He's got, like, a very prepubescent quality to him, and then he's got that, like, I'm coding it gay because he's got like a weird flowery tattoo above his navel, and then you have that scene at the end of the movie, which ends the movie, where, like, the creeper smells both him and the sister, and is like, "No, you're a woman. I don't need you. I need this boy." And I'm going to take him to my fucking lair and do things to him. Like, that's totally pedophile.
I know.
It's really creepy. No pun intended.
It's so interesting how Hollywood picks and chooses who gets blacklisted and who doesn't, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, at least Mel Gibson never hurt anybody. I mean, he hurt people with his words, but
he said terrible things, but...
And I think he might have beaten the shit out of his girlfriend, right? I mean, that might be Alto. I can't remember.
I mean, the things he said to her would definitely lead you to believe that.
Yeah. I mean, so, but, like, as far as we know, he didn't rape anybody. He didn't, like, physically hurt anybody that we know of. And yet he got blacklisted for a long time. But Victor Salva's been doing direct-to-DVD movies pretty much since Jeepers Creepers.
Right.
He even, fucking Powder was nominated for how many Oscars?
Oh,
like,
God. I forgot about Powder. I totally forgot he did
Which
that.
Is also about pedophilia, by the way. It's about, like, this crazy kid who has a weird power over the older male character played by Jeff Goldblum. Straight up, all of his movies are about coded sexuality stuff. Like, on one hand, I heard someone tell me, well, he paid his debt to the society, man. Just let him move on. I'm like, he served 15 months for raping a kid.
Well, and he's like, putting
himself, and then filmed it.
And the thing is, like, he used his movie as a way to obtain his victims, and now he wants to make another movie. So he wants to, he's going through the same pattern of behavior again.
No, exactly.
That's the problem.
Yeah. And I think more than one person, the victim, I don't think he's the only victim, right? Yeah, there's other
Probably
people,
not.
Right? Or no, you know what? I'm confusing the, this case with the Michael Jackson case, which has also been a hot button topic for the last couple weeks.
Yeah.
That's
been around too. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I just cannot. I cannot believe that, like, Victor Sava is making Trump America. Yo.
Yeah. Don't go see America. Those movies. Don't support them. Yeah.
That's all I have, really. There's another thing I wanted to bring up. I don't know if you saw it, but A24 released this untitled trailer for a supposedly untitled maybe movie. It was kind of pitched as a movie. And then A24 very secretly kind of commented on their own Twitter, well, it might not be a movie. Like, maybe it's a TV show. Maybe it's a TV show. Maybe it's just a commercial. They have made commercials before. Everyone I've talked to seems to think it is a movie, but they don't know what it is. Like, nobody knows what it is. Nobody knows who made it. Nobody knows who's in it. Like, it's totally all unknowns. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't seen it. I saw the post about it in the group. But I haven't seen it, but this is interesting, but I hope that, like, we've talked about it, like, ad nauseum before, but, like, this is an interesting way of approaching marketing, and hopefully they don't fall into a J.J. Abrams trap of teasing things, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. It's very Beyonce Lemonade, where, like, they made a movie, they didn't tell anybody that they were making a movie, and, It's easier for them to hide that they're making a movie because they just became they were just a distributor for a long time, but now they're officially a studio, and they're actually producing their own content now. So, like, they could totally do that. They could hide that they were making a movie. It's fascinating. If you haven't watched it, Michaela, you need to. It's fucking crazy looking.
All right.
It's like a minute and a half, and it's like very chilling, very interesting. I don't know what it's about.
Is there any release date or anything or no?
Nope, there's nothing. Just the words A24, and then it has a bunch of, like, words and associations and images and sound. That's it. It's really fascinating and terrifying looking. It looks crazy. It's a very mysterious for like a good solid 24 hours. Everybody thought it started speculating on the internet that it was the new Shane Carruth movie. But Shane Carruth's making his movie with Keanu Reeves, so it's definitely not that movie.
Right. All right. Well, hopefully we get more information on that soon. That sounds really intriguing.
Yeah, definitely. So that kind of brings us to the end of this week's episode. It's been a short one. I think we can probably get back into doing these shorter hour and a half episodes, I think, more regularly.
Definitely.
But you want to, first of all, you want to let everyone know where they can find you?
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram and Facebook, just Michaela Tyson, M-I-C-H-A-E-L-A.
Awesome. And you guys can, as always, find me on Letterboxd, Daily Emissions, Twitter, Red57, Roman numeral 7, of course. And you guys can always find me on Facebook and Instagram. Before we officially sign off for sure, what are we doing next week?
Is anything big coming out next week?
Split comes out this week.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
I'm so down.
That's kind of what I was thinking.
I had Live by Night in my back pocket, but since it's apparently terrible, that makes me not want to put any effort into it, so.
And I've heard Split's pretty rad.
All right, I'm down.
Yeah, let's definitely do Split. We just did the tell everyone where you can find us.
Yeah.
So, goodbye, everybody.
All right. See you later. That's all, folks.
you, ladies and gentlemen.